Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
From WNYC in New York, this is Soundcheck. I'm John Schaefer. There's a question I sometimes use to do a mic check with guests before we go on the air, and that question is, what was the first album you ever bought with your own money? It gets a guest talking so our engineer Irene can make sure the mic sounds good, but you know, we also sometimes find out a little bit about our guest. Now, normally you don't hear the answer because I ask it before the show. But tonight, singer-songwriter Eleanor Friedberger answers the question on the air with a soundtrack that firmly pegs her as a child of the 80s, even though it looks back to the 50s, and her new album sounds like the 70s. It'll all make sense later when Eleanor plays live. But here's a question for you. Have you read Colin McCann's novel, Let the Great World Spin? All the critics raved about how it's the best post-9/11 novel yet, which maybe it is, but not in the way you would think. Most of the story takes place before 9/11, and in fact, the novel starts with a brief prologue describing the sights and sounds of that morning in 1974 when Philippe Petit stood on the edge of one twin tower, preparing to walk across to the other. I read that prologue and just had to put the book down and collect myself. It is that extraordinary. Well, Colin McCann is back with a new novel called Transatlantic, and it's even more ambitious in scope. It crosses the Atlantic, it crosses centuries, it crosses the boundaries between fact and fiction. He still writes extraordinary language about ordinary sights and sounds, so we thought it would be fun to invite him to do a pick three for us. Colin McCann, welcome to Soundcheck.
Thank you so much. Nice to be here.
So we've asked you for a pick three. The new book does have kind of three parallel stories running concurrently.
Yeah.
The different strands, to quote one of those three stories, which is that of the three-strand Irish peace process.
That's correct.
There's not a lot of music referred to specifically in this novel, although Maple Leaf Rag comes to play in one point. How careful are you in placing actual songs in your works?
Well, first of all, I mean, I'm deeply influenced by music, and I listen. I used to have this great stereo where I'd put in one CD and it would play the same album over and over and over again, so it would dissolve and become part of the language, I'm sure. You know, I wouldn't even recognize it anymore, like Astral Weeks or something like that. I'd play that and listen over and over again because, you know, language, you want it to operate like music on the page. You want it to form a sort of music into the reader's head. As for individual songs, I mean, it can be dangerous to, it's like putting in brand names, you know. It can be dangerous to put too many in a text. But something like Maple Leaf Rag is good because you want to give it that sort of like 20s twist and, you know. And just the word rag is fantastic because it refers to, you know, ragtime and it's all torn up and everything like that. And so, I enjoy the music of a sentence, yeah. I would say, mostly.
What was interesting about the use of Maple Leaf Rag to me was I kind of knew there were words to it, but I had never actually read them.
Right.
And obviously, in a work of literature, you can't put the melody in, so you give us words in the context of this groundbreaking transatlantic flight that's leaving Newfoundland and going to Ireland, which is one of the three transatlantic crossings.
Correct.
Along with an Irish maid going in the reverse direction during the years of the famine, and George Mitchell going from New York to Belfast.
And my favorite one of all, which is the one that stunned me into actually writing the book, is Frederick Douglass. In 1845, you know, as a slave. He went to Ireland and landed in Ireland 1845 as the famine was unfolding at his feet. And he went on a lecture tour as an abolitionist, and then found a country that was even worse off in his eyes than
his own people.
His own people down south who were enslaved.
Yeah. And his factual visit to Ireland becomes the catalyst for the fictional transatlantic journey.
That's right. Yeah, I like to mess with this idea of what's true, what's not true, what's history, what's not history, what's real, what's imagined. Because it always strikes me that the real is as imagined as the imagined is real. So you know, even, you know, some people say, well, journalism was in the newspapers, it was a fact. Well, but journalism is shaped too, you know, it's language, and we shape it in certain ways, and you know, we know how news gets shaped, and this idea that there is a fact that's arrivable at and a complete truth, we all know that you have to, you know, mistrust and distrust what's going on, and a fact when too deeply held can often become its exact opposite, a lie. And so fiction, nonfiction, shaping narratives is all very interesting to me.
And the idea of shaping narratives, of shaping language, the kind of musicality that you were talking about a moment ago, we associate that with the Irish.
Right.
And I think maybe it's Senator George Mitchell in the book who finds himself thinking about how the Irish have a song for somebody ends up thinking, or maybe it's Emily Ehrlich.
Yes, that's right.
The Irish have a song for everything.
Absolutely. Don't get me singing, though. I'm serious. Like, I do. My biggest problem in life is that I do sing, but I can't. So I'm the world's worst at a party, and like I'm the bloke who stands there in the corner and say, wait till you hear this one, you know, and like I'll sing Carrickfergus or Raglan Road or something like that, and totally off key. Beautiful songs though, they get away with it because the language in the songs happens to be so good.
On Raglan Road of an autumn day, I saw her first and knew that her dark hair would weave a snare that I might one day rue.
But yeah, I mean, All our love songs are sad, and all our fighting songs are merry, you know. Mm-hmm. What is wrong with us?
We're speaking with Colin McCann, the author of the new novel Transatlantic, and before that, of course, Let the Great World Spin and Zoli and others. Now, in picking some songs for us today, you chose not necessarily your favorites, but songs that would be interesting for our listeners to hear.
Yeah, I kind of wanted to have a rap about them, about some of these songs, and talk about them. And I mean, honestly, the songs I just mentioned, Raglan Road and Carrickfergus, would probably be the ones. I talked with an Irish writer many years ago, and he said that you know where you're from when you know where you want to be buried, which is a very interesting notion. But then he started also to talk about, you know what music you like the most when you know, when you can say which one you're going to have sung, not necessarily at your funeral, which is a bit ugh, but at your wake, you know, at 4 o'clock in the morning when everyone's drunk and like, you know, and dancing around, or, you know, wailing in the back garden. Mm-hmm. What's the song that they're going to sing for you? And I always thought Raglan Road or Carrickfergus would be the ones, but I wasn't going to get morose today. I wanted to choose some other ones.
I do have to say, though, Raglan Road, of all the many great Irish songs, that is one of my favorites.
Absolutely.
Raglan Road.
Yeah.
You chose for us today Mohilamar.
Yes.
My Gallant Darling, which has been sung for many a year by many an artist. Whose version do you like?
I like the Sting and the Chieftains. And when Paddy Maloney opens up with those pipes, I just think he opens up the heart of the song. And a funny thing is, I mean, okay, I'm going to be name dropping now, because I was just in Listowel last week and I met with Paddy, and I did the liner notes for the new Chieftains album, which is fun, you know. And you know, you get to, as life goes on, and you get to meet some of these people. But hanging out with him in a hotel in Listowel, when he takes out the pipes and people gather around, it's one of those magical moments. And I have to say, when Sting gets on this and he pulls that voice out of somewhere deep, I always think of Sting as being Irish anyway. He's from Newcastle.
Right.
But his affinity is deeply, deeply one that I respect and admire. And I'm actually working with him on a charity gig, and we're going to be in Chicago next week, and he's going to sing to a couple of hundred kids from high schools in Chicago, and it's all about.
And what will you be doing?
I will not be singing. I'll be sitting around talking about this charity, which is actually called Narrative 4. And we're trying to get kids from all around the world, from Haifa, from Belfast, from Haiti, from New Orleans, from Chicago in particular, together to acquire and retell one another's stories, which is a fantastic thing. Mm-hmm. And also, eventually, we'll do it musically. But Sting is one of those great artists who gets involved in all these good causes and stuff. And he certainly belts it out on this song.
It's a great version of Mohila Mar, My Gallant Darling, from Sting and the Chieftains. The song's called Mohila Mar, My Gallant Darling, an old Irish tune sung by Sting with the great Irish band The Chieftains from their 1995 record The Long Black Veil, picked for us by novelist Colin McCann, whose most recent album, recent book.
You know, I should have had an album. I definitely would have gone down in sales.
The most recent book is called Transatlantic, and it's all about the tangled web of transatlantic crossings that Colin have bound together the Irish people and the American people for a century and a half.
Yes.
And you too. I mean, your own transatlantic experience, I'm right. sure, must have colored this novel somehow.
Well, we're bound, as you know, in the most extraordinary way. I'm not sure that there are two nations that are so sort of helixed together. And America's always been important to the Irish imagination, to the idea of escape. But also, Ireland has been so important over here in producing cultural figures and producing presidents and people, but also your down-home American personality too. And then the reverse is very important as well. So people like Senator George Mitchell, who's in the novel, people like Frederick Douglass, they've gone across and they have affected with grace and dignity some of the proceedings in Ireland. And,
yeah. Well, and, you know, one of the Let the Great World Spin has sort of been acknowledged, as you know, as sort of the great post 9/11 novel. And yet 9/11 doesn't happen in the novel.
Right.
So confronting a tragedy doesn't necessarily mean describing it in the minutest detail and
right.
teasing every possible angle out of it. There are other ways of confronting.
Absolutely. When I wrote Let the Great World Spin, I used Philippe Petit's beautiful tightrope walk just as a pull-through analogy for what was going on. And of course, the soldiers were coming home from Vietnam, which mapped over onto the soldiers coming home from Iraq and Afghanistan and issues of religion, issues of technology and all these things. But so you work at it in a metaphorical way. And I think the transatlantic tries to do some of the same things. But I want to talk about faith and belonging and the fact that we are so incredibly connected to one another. But there are issues of the anonymous moment entering history. For example, when I wrote about Senator George Mitchell, who, as everybody knows, really, he went across and negotiated the peace process. And history can talk about him.
He went across and across and across.
Exactly. And on the first page, I have him changing a nappy, or rather a diaper.
A diaper, yeah.
A diaper. And so history doesn't change diapers. It just doesn't, you know. but fiction can. And so fiction can enter into those small little dusty moments or quiet moments or private moments that add up to the grand public moment too. We forget sometimes, you know, that Mr. Obama has to wake up in the morning and brush his teeth and, you know, do things that other people have to do too. We sort of tend to idealize them or freeze them in the aspect of their power. You know, they're there, boomf. But the fact of the matter is, he's just like you and me in so many ways. And that's what makes power, you know, a thing to negotiate and to think about. And, you know, it makes it vulnerable too, which is always, a thing to think about and investigate. You know, I like the fact that books can do that.
Yeah. We're speaking with the novelist Colin McCann, whose most recent book is called Transatlantic. One of the things that makes it great, Colin, is while I mentioned before you don't specifically quote a lot of songs, you write beautifully about sound and sometimes about the lack of sound. When the thrum of an airplane engine cuts off and the pilots who've just crossed the Atlantic for the first time are left not hearing the silence but kind of feeling the silence.
That's right.
I mean, do you listen to music when you're writing?
Absolutely. I mean, all the time. I mean, I now have the you know, I wish I had some sort of orchestra in my room that I could call up at any time. I have the iPod. I'm still trying to get used to it. I'm a bit of a techno idiot, and I don't know how to download all these things. And but I love music. Oh, not only just to block out the sound. I work at home, and I have three kids. So sometimes you just got to turn it up high and block out the sound. But sometimes you want to write a scene that's noisy. So you put on a band like, I don't know, if I wanted something noisy and Irish and a little bit raucous and sexy, maybe Thin Lizzy, you know, at a certain stage. Want something quieter, you know, musical, you know, you go in and take, I don't know, Martha Argerich, and you want to hear her, you know, boom.
The great Argentine pianist.
Exactly. Yeah. But if you want something with soul, you know, you go to someone like Van Morrison, who is the ultimate soul artist.
Now, you mentioned Astral Weeks a few minutes ago.
Yeah, every album.
Is that a touchstone for you?
Yeah, absolute touchstone. But, I mean, it wasn't the first album I bought. I remember buying Bowie was the first album I bought.
Which one?
Changes. So I was smuggling at home, and I also remember buying the Cars, and I don't know if the same album cover was on the front of the Cars album in the 70s of a woman with very provocative
and bright red lipstick.
Yeah. And do you know what I did? Like I cut the album cover down and turned it inside out and sellotaped it on the outside so my mother wouldn't think that I was listening to something really really naughty and vile. And you know, destroying my poor young Catholic mind. But music, there was there. Yeah, I remember buying those albums. And the first single I bought, this is really embarrassing. It was Radar Love by Golden Earring. Or is it the other way around?
No, that's right.
Radar Love by Golden Earring. And
we got a thing. It's called right. Radar Love.
Fantastic. My brother was a DJ as well, and he had a little company called Sounds OK, and you know, a few flashing lights, and he'd go around. So he had lots of albums at home all the time too, which was always great. I was always fascinated by the needle and how hairy the needle would get on a record as it went round and round and round, and the sound you get. This sounds so nostalgic now, because it's amazing the way time changes so quickly. But you remember the sound you get when you pluck the dust and the fuzz off the end of the needle and get the static going,
kind of thing.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
I miss that. I must go ahead and buy one of those record players again.
Pick a song from Astral Weeks for us to listen to.
Madame George.
This is Colin McCann's Pick 3 on Soundcheck, and this is by Van Morrison.
The one and only Madame George. Look from outside, frosty window wraps. She jumps up and says, Lord have mercy, I think that it's the cops. And immediately drops everything she got down into the street below. And you know you gotta go. Sandy Road, throwing pennies at the bridges down below, and the rain, hail, sleet, and snow. Say goodbye to Madame George.
Song's called Madame George from Van Morrison and his 1968 album Astral Weeks. The novelist Colin McCann, his most recent book is called Transatlantic, which is out now and full of these crossings from Ireland to the U.S. and, or I should say, North America. Canada's involved as well.
That's right.
And then back again. And certainly Van Morrison is, that's a sound that has crossed the Atlantic with incredible ease over the past 40 years.
I remember hearing that song for the first time, and you hear the music first, and then you listen a time again, and you say, hold on one second, did he just say Dublin? And how could Dublin be in a song? Because we were quite isolated. I mean, and also, you know, in Ireland, we would think, you know, anything that was vaguely self-referential would be, you know, would be sort of like, oh, have to have, you know, conservative origins or something. Here's a man doing this sound that I'd never even heard before, and suddenly on a train from Dublin up to Sandy Row in Belfast. You mean you can sing about that sort of stuff? And then it's a transvestite, and you know what's going on here? And suddenly your world is open, bigger and bigger and bigger. And he makes that American journey. I mean, that's a big American sound with a you know, a very Irish lyric. And for me, it was that discovery that you could write about otherness, that you could go somewhere else. You didn't have to remain home in your little, you know, three-bedroom, four-bedroom, suburban, semi-detached house. And, you know, you could expand your mind and go outwards. And Van Morrison does that, like, really probably more than anyone.
How big a deal was it to have a song that in one line connected Dublin to Belfast?
Huge. Huge. And you know, you still don't see it all that much. I mean, in the novel, I try to connect Dublin to Belfast and show how sort of seamless they move between one and the other. But at that stage, you know, when bombs were going off in you know, along the train line that Madame George takes, when bombs were going off in London and even in Dublin, it was extraordinary to hear. To hear somebody do that. It's like somebody just whispered your name in a song or something like that. I remember another song where I did hear a name. Do you remember Dexy's Midnight Runners?
Come on, Eileen.
Yeah, Come on, Eileen. But they wrote another song. It was about, and I can't remember the name of it right now, but it goes, shut up, you don't understand it. Shut up, that's not the way I planned it. And it's Oscar Wilde and Brendan Behan, Sean O'Casey, George Bernard Shaw, Samuel Beckett. And then at the end, it fades off and I hear Edna O'Brien and then Sean McCann. right? It's my father. They'd obviously gone to a dictionary of writers. My dad was a writer, wrote 27 books. But they'd taken all the prominent ones. And then at the end, and I remember calling my dad into the sitting room and said, listen to this, Dad. And he was amazed too. Why would they invoke his name at the very end of a song? And I thought about that song for my pick three, but I thought,
a little too self-referential.
Yeah.
Now, why did I think your dad was a soccer player?
He was a soccer player. He started out as a soccer player. Then he became a reporter for the BBC. Then he moved back to Dublin and he became a journalist. And then he wrote books originally about soccer, about kids, seven kids' soccer books. And then he wrote about the history of the Irish theatre, about Sean O'Casey, about Brendan Behan, about the Irish theatre.
All right, so in this list of famous writers who get name-checked in this song that you were talking about, you mentioned Edna O'Brien.
Yes.
She somehow gets us to the third of your pick three.
Yeah, I saw Edna recently in London, and I remembered how over 20 years ago, I was living in Japan. I came back from London for publication of my very first book, which is a collection of short stories called Fish in the Slow Black River. Now, I was a little punk and I had a big black overcoat that was torn, red line, wearing a beret, and I thought I was going to go into this publishing company and everyone was going to turn around and be, you know, clap and all this sort of stuff. And I went in and nobody gave a damn, right? It was my publication.
Thank you
day.
For just, I saw the editing, the self-editing process there. That was nice.
And I wandered around and I was in a real funk and then from the end of the corridor, opened this door, coming out of her editor's room, and it was this beautiful woman with long red hair, Edna O'Brien, and she knew what it meant, and she sort of asked me to come along that evening to read with her at a Waterstones in London. And it was only years later that I was listening to this song by Dire Straits, and I realized that this song is about Edna O'Brien, this lady writer on the TV. She knew all about her history, you know. And so Mark Knopfler was obviously watching television some night, and on comes Edna O'Brien, and he decided to write a song about her. And I also think that Knopfler is one of the great musicians. He's so much fun to listen to, too.
Do you know the Cal soundtrack that he did?
Oh,
very, very Irish.
Yeah, beautiful, beautiful, beautiful soundtrack. But then, like, he had great fun with things like Money for Nothing and Communique and, you know.
Well, this song, Lady Writer, is from the 1979 album Communique by Mark Knopfler and the band Dire Straits. And it's the third of Colin McCann's pick three for us on Soundcheck today. His new book is called Transatlantic. It is well worth picking up. And Colin, it's been great spending some time with you. Thanks very much.
Thank you so much.
Lady writer on the TV. Yeah, she had another quality. The way you used to look. And I know you never read a book. Just the way that her hair fell down around her face.
The R&B singer Erykah Badu is gearing up for a performance this weekend with the Brooklyn Philharmonic. We'll find out more. And later, a live performance from Eleanor Friedberger and her band. This is Soundcheck. The song by Erykah Badu comes from her New America series. The song's called Master Teacher. One of a series of Erykah Badu songs that she's now doing with the Brooklyn Philharmonic. Yesterday, Erykah, the Brooklyn Phil, and conductor Alan Pearson all got together for the first time in Midtown to rehearse the new orchestral version of these songs. And Soundcheck was there. Tomorrow, you can hear Erykah Badu talking about what it means to be artist in residence with the orchestra for the upcoming season. For now, though, here's a quick peek.
Well, this is my first day. It's really too soon to say exactly what I'm feeling, but it's having a chance to hear this body of work done in a totally different remixed way. The different movements that we go through are kind of what I was, the process or the route that my mind was taking almost.
Well, now that's interesting because most of the songs, I think all of the songs that you're doing with the Brooklyn Phil come from the New America Part 1.
Right.
Which seemed to be, I mean, that album was kind of a piece.
Yeah.
You know, both in terms of the kind of ideas behind it and the way the songs flowed into each other. It was almost as if you were thinking on a big canvas when you wrote those songs.
Yeah. There's with this piece, it's part of a two-piece duo, a New America Part 1 and 2. Part 1 is that we're doing is a little bit more social, analytical, politically, you know, speaking. And the second one is a little more right-brained, emotional. So I would call this my left brain part. And it's kind of me standing on an apex, looking around, shifting from one part of the world to the other, comparing what we are all going through.
That's Erykah Badu, the best-selling soul and hip-hop singer-songwriter. Hear her talk about her brand new collaboration with the Brooklyn Philharmonic tomorrow on Soundcheck. Up next, Eleanor Friedberger and her band Play Live. Stay with us. This is Soundcheck. I'm John Schaefer. Eleanor Friedberger might be best known to music fans as one half of the Fiery Furnaces, the art rock duo she formed with her brother Matthew more than a decade ago. But while that duo is on hiatus, both Matthew and Eleanor have kept busy with solo projects. Eleanor was last here in the Soundcheck studio with her 2011 solo debut called Last Summer, a nostalgic project that made our best of list for that year. Now she's returned with a follow-up called Personal Record. This one's nostalgic, too, for the sounds of the 1970s. We'll hear more about it in a bit, but first, let's hear a song. Here's Eleanor Friedberger and her band, live on Soundcheck with I Don't Want to Bother You.
Want to bother you? There's something to say that I want you to hear. It's hard when you're far, I forget when you're near. And I'd rather be 2 inches from your face than floating about in a different state. There's something to say. I don't want to bother you. But there's something to say that I want you to hear. It might be some time before we reappear. And I'll see you when I see you, sure. Hard not to want just a little bit more. I don't want to bother you, but there's something to say. You're giving me everything I ever wanted. I want to be scared and I want to be haunted. Judgment impaired by despair as I fall on my face. Oh,
I'm a disgrace. Something to say that I want you to know. Hello and goodbye and goodbye and hello. Sometimes it's like I made you up. One more word and then I'll shut up. I don't wanna bother you. There's something to say. And you're giving me everything I ever wanted. I wanna be scared and I wanna be haunted. Judgment impaired by despair is a fall on my face. And you're giving me everything I ever wanted. I wanna be scared and I wanna be haunted. Judgment impaired by your hair as it falls on my face. Oh, you're a disgrace.
Eleanor Friedberger and her band live on Soundcheck with I Don't Wanna Bother You, which is from her new record called Personal Record. Eleanor Friedberger, welcome back to Soundcheck.
Thanks for having me, John.
Great band. Malcolm Perkins on guitar, Cassandra Jenkins on bass, Noah Hecht playing drums, Michael Rosen playing the Wurlitzer, a genuine Wurlitzer organ here in the studio. And
a Nomad organ.
Which is also a kind of a period piece.
Yes. Actually, it belongs to my brother, so I'd like to give a shout out
all
to
right,
him with the
to
Nomad.
Matthew.
Yeah.
Okay. That sound, that 70s sound, certainly is a part of this personal record.
Yeah, I feel like that song really encapsulates the whole record. To me, that's the sound of the whole album.
Yeah, but the 70s has many different sounds, you know.
Not to me.
Really?
Well, I don't know. I wasn't really around too long in the 70s. I was only around for 4 years. You tell me, John.
Well, you know.
There was disco. There was punk.
Punk, disco,
yeah.
Hip-hop,
what else?
All began in the 70s.
Uh-huh.
In the song we began with.
I'm a fan of the lamer sort of sounds, I guess. The more plain ones.
Okay. But, you know, in the song When I Knew, you reference Soft Machine,
uh-huh.
You know, this like really artsy British jazz rock band.
And I also reference the song Come On Eileen.
From Dexy's Midnight Runners, which of course is 80s, not
70s. Oh, right, good point, sorry. Well, it's in chronological order, that song.
It is. As you say, you were only around for four of those years in the 70s, and you certainly wouldn't have been the most active listener to music back then.
I wouldn't, you know, how can you be so sure?
I guess I can't.
I sat in the back seat when my mom drove around and we listened to, not to say, you know, other radio station names, but we listened to, you know, Magic 104 and...
Where'd you grow up?
Chicago.
Okay.
Those stations no longer exist.
So. Uh-huh. So you remember being like 3 and 4 years old and hearing
music
in the car?
Oh, yeah, I remember listening, you know, my mom would be driving and we'd sing along together and that was... You know,
wow.
those are some of my earliest memories.
What kinds of stuff?
You know, the Rolling Stones.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's not the lamer side of the 70s, although I guess by the 76, 77, they did put out a few stinkers. But what about, like, you know, the pop music of the day? Fleetwood Mac, Carole King. I mean, the 70s was...
Yeah,
full of...
no, I think, I mean, all that stuff I discovered later as a young teenager, for sure.
That's kind of what I was getting at here, is that this must have been a process of... You know, this wasn't just like, hey, it's the music of when I was 3 and 4.
No. But I was lucky enough to grow up near a secondhand record store where, you know, you could buy anything for 99 cents.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I remember buying you name it. You know, just the, you know, I what was one of the first records I bought? Van Morrison, you know, Moon Dance was, you know, a dollar. That,
right.
That informed me.
You know, very often when we're doing like microphone checks beforehand, you know, we need somebody to.
Am I not
talk.
Speaking loud
no,
enough?
No, 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 no. You're doing fine, but you know, if you say to somebody, "Talk into your mic," inevitably they'll say, "Well, what do you want me to say?" So instead of "Talk into your mic," I used to ask people, "What was the first record you ever bought?"
Oh, interesting.
With your own money,
right?
And so for you, it was Van Morrison, Moon
Dance. Well, no, that was one of the first LPs I remember buying. I had some cassettes before that.
Uh huh. All right, what was the first cassette you bought with your own money?
It was probably the soundtrack to Stand By Me.
Yeah, all right. So that's
something like that. Yeah, I was an oldies fanatic.
So the album's called Personal Record, which you can take in a couple of ways. And the album cover, the photo of you swimming,
mm-hmm.
you know, sort of suggests an athletic endeavor, someone
right.
setting their own personal record.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a kind of conscious ambiguity, I guess.
Definitely. I mean, for the record cover, I really wanted to. There's maybe you know more about her. I'd be interested. There's a woman named Lizzie Mercier, I think is how you say her name. Mm-hmm. I saw a record cover of hers. And she's lying on her front smoking a cigarette and writing something next to a swimming pool. And I kind of wanted to copy that, the feeling of that, which I thought was very cool and sexy, but not like overtly mm-hmm. sexy. And I think, you know, the swimming pool thing, it just is very evocative. And I didn't want to use a track and field reference because that's kind of dull to
yeah,
me.
Yeah, yeah. Also, you're swimming freestyle, so you're reaching for something. You
know? I was actually doing a breaststroke, but I kicked off like this. I'm not good at freestyle. Breaststroke is my stroke.
All right. So the album co-written with John Wesley Harding, who's been here on our show a number of
uh-huh.
times.
I call him Wes.
Well, and his real name, Wesley Stace.
Mm-hmm.
He's a novelist under that name and singer-songwriter under the name John Wesley Harding. How did the two of you start working together?
We met at a place called Le Poisson Rouge.
Mm-hmm. The club
here. I like
here
to say it like that.
Well, that is the way to say it.
we met. There was a Bob Dylan conference happening at the Tribeca Street, the 92nd Street Y in Tribeca, where my brother was, believe it or not, speaking about Bob Dylan. I don't know what he could possibly have to say about him. And people like Grail Marcus and Wes was also speaking about Dylan because I guess he did some touring with the band in the 90s.
And took his name from a Bob Dylan song.
I think he's some kind of expert. And he sang some songs, I sang some songs, and we just became fast friends from there. But it's a nice place to meet someone.
And
that sort of kind of awful, what could be an awful, creepy, weird concert.
So the results are on this record called Personal Record from Eleanor Friedberger. She and the band performing here in New York June 28th, that's a Friday night, at the Music Hall of Williamsburg. And they're all playing for us here in the studio. You want to do Stare at the Sun for us next?
Yes, please.
All right. This is Eleanor Friedberger and her band performing another song from the new album called Personal Record live here in the Soundcheck studio. And for this one, Eleanor will strap on a guitar of her own, join the rest of the band.
Back of the taxi, you turned off the TV and read me a book on your phone. Oh, here's the return of your skeleton key. Oh, baby, the places we've gone. If that was goodbye, then I must be high. You know I'll be seeing you soon. If that was goodbye, it'll snow in July as it hailed in the middle of June. Oh, give me your toothpaste, give me your ointment, give me your body in bed. Keep this in amber, keep our appointment, remember the things that we said. If that was goodbye, then I must be high, you must be the sugar I need. If that was goodbye, then I am a fly, and the future is guaranteed. Cause when I'm with you, everything's treasure, I forget what it's like to be gone. I'm far from the town, in the suburbs of your pleasure.
I've been in exile so long. I try not to stare at the sun. I try not to stare at the sun. I try not to stare at the sun. Cooperative coffee and synchronized showers. I try not to look at the clock. Goodbye to your castle, away from the tower, and drop me a line from the dock. If that was goodbye, then you must be high, and maybe I'm losing the thread. If that was goodbye, the sea has run dry, so I fill it with tears instead. Cause when I'm with you, everything's treasure, I forget what it's like to be gone. I'm far from the town and the suburbs of your pleasure. I've been in exile so long. I try not to stare at the sun. I try not to stare at the sun. I try not to stare at the sun. Treasure, I forget what it's like to be gone. I'm far from the town in the suburbs of your pleasure. I've been in exile so long. I try not to stare at the sun. No, I try not to stare at the sun. I try not to stare at the sun.
Eleanor Friedberger and her band live on Soundcheck. The song is called Stare at the Sun, and you'll find it on the new album called Personal Record from Eleanor Friedberger, on which you will also find this next song. Here's Other Boys live on Soundcheck.
In a van with her twin, gives you a lift and idles the engine. Leans over and tells you how it's gonna be about me, or the long top pony with the thick dark mane, 14 hands, 4,000 names. You share her feed at the compound trough and climb back on when she throws you off. There are other boys. There are other boys, too. There are other boys, too. But don't let it worry you. And that spider you kissed in her stairwell, who demonstrates acoustics to ne'er-do-wells, then spins her web and sells her spells to others in her clientele. And the chick who writes songs and then insists on playing them, yes, she's persistent. Well, how could any man resist a girl with such a big set list? Or the one you whisper to when you call her, she's taller than her basketball her.
saw you both on deck before the wreck. You'll either drown or crick your neck. There are other boys too. There are other boys too. There are other boys too. But don't let it worry you. And that's sometime star of stage and screen, who had a bit part in a film back in her teens. Oh no, I'm not saying she wasn't great. Perhaps she planned to be upstaged by the Empire State. And the one who smokes your cigarettes, yeah, she might pose the biggest threat yet. When no one else can intercede, she's got the stuff you think you need. Swing doors at the old chateau. When they quit calling, texting, knocking, I will be there for the locking. There are other girls you see. There are other girls you see. There are other girls you see. But I don't let it. There are other boys too. There are other boys too. There are other boys too. Oh, but don't let it worry.
That is called Other Boys. It's Eleanor Friedberger and the band live on Soundcheck. Michael Rosen playing the Wurlitzer, Malcolm Perkins on guitar, Cassandra Jenkins on bass, Noah Hecht behind our drum kit here in the Soundcheck studio from the album Personal Record. And Eleanor, we were talking before about the sounds of the 70s. Were you a fan of Graham Parker and The Rumour?
Not so much, actually. He's only someone I've listened to recently.
Yeah.
That song, Stare at the Sun, I was thinking about that today. I only discovered this guy, Dwight Twilley, last year.
Yeah.
Do you know?
Yeah.
You look very skeptical. But he's got song. He's got
wasn't
this
my
song.
Thing, but I, you know.
Listen to the song called Looking for the Magic.
All my life I look.
It's on an album called Twilly Don't Mind. A friend of mine had a birthday party last summer and flew him up here to play. He assembled this backing band for him, and it was fantastic. Yeah. But this song is one that I am still not sick of, but I feel like it has a similar sort of vibe as Stare at the Sun. That's kind of... I was listening to it on repeat.
Mm-hmm. Well, I was just thinking of Other Boys.
That's a different song.
Well, it sort of put me in the mood... It put me in mind of the song Squeezing Out Sparks by Graham Parker and The Rumour from his best right. known record, which is from the 70s.
Believe it or not, that song was supposed to sound more like a John Lennon kind of solo okay. album yeah, song yeah. or a Yoko song called, is it called Born in a Prison?
Mm-hmm.
You know that song?
Yeah, yeah. So it's that specific for you. There are specific oh, yeah. songs from the 70s that...
Yeah,
kind of
I mean, that's just how I work. And luckily, you know, I worked with the same producer on this album who I worked with on last summer. And by the time we got to this record, you know, he just was used to me saying, listen to the kick drum on Born in a Prison, and we need to make it sound like that,
right,
you know.
Right.
And he understood that that was how I was able to communicate these ideas, is just by stealing, blatantly stealing.
Well, that's how all the arts work, isn't it?
I guess.
Except some people are not quite so blatant about it, or not quite so upfront about it, maybe I should say.
Not so good at it.
Yeah, right.
I like to say.
Speaking of the different influences that go into this new record, there's a song on it called Echo or Encore, which has a kind of Brazilian flavor to it. Not the first time we've heard that from you. Is that also something that... You grew up listening to?
No, not at all. I had a bandmate who had lived in Portugal, and he somehow, you know, not somehow, he started listening to Brazilian music through his Portuguese girlfriend, and he introduced me to Jorge Ben and Gilberto Gil. I said that so badly. I won't say it again.
Gilberto Gil, yeah.
Yeah,
yeah.
Perfect. And yeah, that's been more of a recent kind of love for me.
Yeah.
But Jorge Ben's one of my favorites.
You name-checked him at some point on last summer, right? Was it?
I don't know. The last song on that album was my tribute to one of his... I mean, it doesn't sound anything like it, but in my mind, yeah. it was a Jorge Ben song.
Right, that might be what I'm thinking of, which was, of course, the last time you were here on Soundcheck. This time with the new album called Personal Record, and Eleanor and the Band playing Friday, June 28th, here in New York at the Music Hall of Williamsburg, and... Eleanor Friedberger's new album called Personal Record is out now. Eleanor, great to see you again.
Thank you so much, John.
Envelop me in sound. Smother me. Pummel me. Cover me. Humble me. With silence. With noise.
Tomorrow on the show, hear more of my conversation with singer Erica Badu as she rehearsed for her performance this weekend with the Brooklyn Philharmonic, plus an in-studio session from Yellowbirds, the New York-based project from the singer-songwriter Sam Cohen. Soundcheck is a production of WNYC. Irene Trudell leads our engineering team with Paul Schneider, George Wellington, Bill O'Neill, and Jason Isaac. The show is produced by Greta Cohn, Katie Bishop, with Alex Kappelman, and our intern, Alexandra Martinez. Our digital producer is Mike Katziff. Our executive producer is Joel Meyer. I'm John Schaefer. See you right back here at 9 tomorrow for the next Soundcheck.